And welcome back to CinemaVino.
Very special episode of Die Hard 2 CinemaVino.
Exactly. This continues our Christmas series looking at Die Hard 2.
Which in German is
the
Die Harder.
The Harder.
The Harder.
Which was also my nickname in high school.
Du. Du hast. Du hast mich.
Oh. I saw them live. It was great.
Who was that?
Rammstein.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I did not understand that reference, so there we go. I'm glad I'm...
Oh.
Yeah.
German.
Yeah.
Run, Lola, Run.
German industrial metal band.
Exactly.
Rind, yeah. Lola, Rind.
They were actually banned from the United States for, like...
Pussy rioting.
A couple decades, yeah. So I saw them on their first, like, tour back in the United States. It was really cool.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did they... Have they played locally anywhere?
No, this was in Dallas.
Okay.
They played a big, like, big show.
Okay. So Die Hard 2, Christmas movie, ironically released on July 4th, 1990. Hmm. So America.
Independence Day, Christmas movie. That's a bold choice.
Interchangeable. Right.
Sure.
Well, Christmas in July is now kind of a big thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. And maybe because of this movie. Mm-hmm. It was based on the novel 58 Minutes by Walter Wager, which was unrelated to Die Hard series.
Oh, really?
Which was based on the movie Nothing Lasts Forever.
I actually read that book.
The original, like the Robert.
The original
book. 58 Minutes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. The
Nothing Lasts Forever.
Lasts Forever.
The John McClane, yeah.
Which was a sequel to another book.
Which was based on the movie The Towering Inferno, which is unrelated to either of those movies.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, wow. Think about that. A lot of mixed, you know, continuity, whatever going on here.
Weird.
So this was drawn from a novel which did not feature John McClane at all. So that has to be a first that I have ever heard of.
Well, interesting to note, in Nothing Lasts Forever, at the end, that John McClane dies. Mm. At the end of the book that Die Hard 1 is based off of.
And they wanted Frank Sinatra to be the original John McClane.
Well, no, this was a second film, I thought. I thought they filmed the actual movie with Sinatra the first time.
I'm not sure about that. I know
I'm an idiot, but I remember that.
We have to
maybe
Google
it's
that.
Maybelline.
All right. Talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. Travis is going to Google that. So basically, this came out 2 years after the original Die Hard.
Okay. Yeah. So I looked it up. Frank Sinatra actually starred in the film The Detective, which was based off of the novel of the same name that was the prequel, basically, to the film Nothing Lasts Forever, which Die Hard was made from. Yeah. So they wanted to get Frank Sinatra to come back to play that same character for Nothing Lasts Forever / Die Hard.
In what year?
And he was like, no thanks. All right.
Because Die Hard was like 88.
Probably mm-hmm. probably before that.
And Sinatra would be
yeah, because I think it
super
took,
old by then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it took a while to finally, you know, get somebody else. So I'm not sure what year they asked him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it said he was once offered the role of Die Hard. Frank Sinatra was. Mm-hmm. And obviously that didn't happen.
Bruce Willis was a great fit for that.
I love the musical number at the end of Die Hard. I thought, you know,
yeah.
Bruce Willis was a good fit for that. Yeah.
Exactly. Although Frank Sinatra definitely could have sang "What Let It Snow" at the end of it.
Oh, I was thinking "My Way."
Yeah, that.
I did it my way.
I agree completely. I'd love to see that.
So, yeah, the name of the character from The Detective was changed in Die Hard, and so wasn't a direct sequel then. But that's that portion of the story. But we're talking about Die Hard 2.
So Die Hard 2, it's Christmas Eve.
And it's based on 58
Minutes? 58
Minutes.
58 Minutes.
Walter okay. Wager.
Gotcha.
And that book centers on, just like the movie, the idea that terrorists take over Dulles Airport and basically shut the runways down and all the neighboring airports down. There's a blizzard, and so if their demands aren't met, these planes are going to run out of fuel and crash unless they turn the runway lights back on.
This felt very derivative of, like, the Iran-Contra scandal, mm-hmm. right? Like, very much like looking at U.S. troops' disposition toward South American dictators that were basically puppets from the American government that were overthrown by communists.
Very topical. Very of its time.
Super topical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about anything about that, but it sounds cool.
Thanks, Trav.
Just know Ronald Reagan hated communists.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. H.W. Bush hated communists.
And at this time period, they were referred to as commies.
Pinkos.
Yeah, and the common
vernacular. You got a good Pinko refro.
Oh, in yeah, this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like? Something like, no interviews, you Pinko bitch.
Mm-hmm. No interviews, a Pinko commie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, man, that's...
Damn.
That's harsh.
Wow.
Wow.
So, and basically this movie follows the plot of the book. Terrorists led by William Sadler take over the area around Dulles Airport.
Who does a lot of Tai Chi in the nude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did anybody else, when he was like butt booty naked?
It was
like,
unnecessary, but I appreciated it.
Like, yeah. Was anybody else looking for his little Higginbottom dangling from the front side?
Oh, my question.
I thought I saw a little dangle, a little truck balls.
A little tight sack.
And for those who have not seen the movie, let me spoil it. Your introduction to William Sadler as the villain Colonel Stewart is him in his hotel room listening to a broadcast about the initial plot of the movie. He is doing some Tai Chi exercises in the full nude. The movie...
No, full frontal, though.
No, it's from the back.
Full backle.
You see full butt cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
Butt cheeks.
My question is, what kind of Tai Chi classes was this guy going to where everybody was doing these exercises in the buck-ass nude?
He probably just got out of the shower and it's nice to do. But like,
false. He was the instructor.
Oh. But he also pretended like his remote control was a gun and then turned around and shot the TV and then turned it off.
Pretty sweet.
That's how I turn the TV off every time.
Oh, yeah.
Every time.
And it reminds me of a hall monitor in elementary school that like really liked to pretend that he was like jumping through the air and shooting two guns at once from a trampoline.
He shut the TV off.
That's what that move reminded me of.
But he didn't blow on the remote like it was a pistol. Very disappointing. He didn't blow the smoke off.
Would have been cooler.
Yeah. And the question is, like, when this guy's going for, like, his Tai Chi matches, are the people, like, when he shows up in the nude, is anyone alarmed by that? It's like when he is, like, bowing to his opponent, he's wearing a black belt and nothing else.
Honestly, it looked like when he goes for his prostate exam, he snaps off a finger.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, he did have some cheeks.
You're not wrong.
These were some tight cheeks.
Yeah. They were tight cheeks. There were no Todd Wofford cheeks.
Oh my God,
cheeks.
Is that what Tai Chi comes from?
Yeah. He had tight cheeks from all the Tai Chi.
Yes. Well, now I wish I took Tai Chi.
Yeah. So.
And now I'm wondering if Todd takes Tai Chi. Those are some tight cheeks.
There's no doubt of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell you about it because I can't do any of my matches in public because I'm naked. So
I would say...
Is Tai Chi a competitive sport?
I mean, probably, especially when you're naked and you're wearing nothing but an orange belt.
Sean, real quick, stop talking. If you're looking at Todd's butt and you were to talk about it like it was cake, would you or would you not say it angel food cakes?
Oh, I was thinking those springy cheesecakes from Japan.
Ooh.
You know,
spring back.
Yeah. Like the real like...
Pushback.
The ones that really like they're plump jiggle. And they jiggle, but mm-hmm. they have like a good rise to
them. I don't think Todd's jiggle. But anyway, Die Hard 2.
So I was going to say sponge cake, but whatever, you know. Mm-hmm.
Todd's are pretty taut.
Yeah. Yeah, they can be, especially when I'm in my hotel room. So this movie finds Bruce Willis at the... exact same airport area that
getting his car towed.
Mm-hmm. And his wife is landing on a plane, I guess coming in from England,
LA.
Yeah, that's right. LA. Flying into LA. And again, as crazy luck would have it, at the exact same time that the terrorists commandeer the airport and her plane's about to run out of gas. And
the same shit happened to the same guy twice.
Yes. And so John McClane, as in the previous movie,
During Christmas,
springs into action, begins wiping out terrorists and figuring out the plot. And as with the previous movie, none of the people who are in any sort of position of power will do anything about it or listen to anything he says. Because if that were the case, the movie would suddenly come to a grinding halt.
What's the first thing that tips him off, though, is him seeing people at the restaurant with packages that they kind of scoot under mm-hmm. the table with their feet. That's yeah. it. That's yeah. all it tips
he
off.
He ran into Colonel Stewart mm-hmm. at first, and he was like, oh, you look real familiar. We're like, oh, I've been on TV. Like, yeah, okay.
Same.
Yeah. And then he saw, yeah, he's got his hunch.
His intuition, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, his gut.
He's got a cop got hunch. His,
yeah.
Gut.
He just knows.
Let's call it a hunch.
So basically, he gradually starts working his way into this terrorist attack, like as with the previous movie, finding out that there's a lot more to it than he thought. And as with the previous movie, he is on his own. Unlike the first Die Hard, where he is in a claustrophobic setting of the building and there's no way out, this time he is in the very expansive runway setting, lots of space, lots of room for action scenes.
Activities.
Fun fact, longest runway in the world.
Ooh, really?
No.
Oh. I bought into that clip.
Based on this movie, yes.
Yes, miles and miles. This time it is his wife who is trapped in the situation, and he is down on the ground and trying to, like, free her from that. So it's kind of a reversal of the previous movie.
I have to stop us just real quick. So Fred Thompson was in this movie, and he mm-hmm. was, wasn't he a presidential candidate at one time?
He was. Yeah,
he but was, he was also a senator. Yeah. Yeah. So my dad at one time met him years after this. My dad was a pilot.
Is this before or after you punched George H.W. Bush?
I think this is after. But he sees Fred Thompson in...
there's a story behind that, by the way.
Yeah. He sees Fred Thompson in the airport, I guess with his wife, and walks up and is like, hey... shouldn't you be in the tower?
Mm-hmm.
And Fred Thompson's like, what? And then his wife is like, Die Hard. And he goes, oh, yeah, stack them, pack them, and rack them. And that was his, I guess that was his, like, go-to line. Like, yeah, stack them, pack them, and rack them.
That was so, a great line.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Dad always tells me that story. He's like, hey, I met him one time. It's after Die Hard 2. Stack them, pack them, and rack them.
Right, and continue. He delivered it so well. I mean, he was great in that fit of movie where it's like Hunt for Red October, all those kind of movies where it's like he's like the military government brass
authority figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who says these cool, like kind of haggard one-liners like that of like, you know, it's going to be the biggest battle since the Battle of the Jutland and Hunt for Red October. It's like, you know, good for you, man. Travis found some sediment in the bottom of that wine.
You look like Padme. The fucking like.
Ugh. Travis's lips are a delightful shade of dark purple right now.
You need some water, bud?
He drank a little too deeply of that wine. Oh, yeah, there's some definite. Yeah, there's some sediment back there.
Oof.
So, that's real life. That's not harmful. That happens. So, as we were saying, it's like. Basically, the same with the previous movie. It's like John McClane gradually unfolds the plot. Nobody believes him. And so, because the people who work for John McClane are idiots, the plot is allowed to proceed forward. This movie does carry over. It has a different director than the first movie, which first movie was John McTiernan, who would later come back and direct the third movie, Die Hard with a Vengeance. This movie was directed by Rooney Harlan, who was married to Gina Davis at the time. He became a pretty famous action director in his own right. He did, I believe, Cliffhanger and The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson. This movie brings back the composer Michael Kamen from the first Die Hard movie, who did a great job with both scores. I think the Die Hard score is iconic for action movies of that time period, especially because it incorporates sleigh bells into its motif.
Yeah.
And it's like, for anybody
Christmas who, movie, confirmed.
Yeah. For anybody who's wondering if it's a Christmas movie, listen to the fucking sleigh bells on the soundtrack. That will tell you what this is. To me, this was released in 1990. It is a very much an 80s action movie. It has a lot of cornball one-liners.
A sitting duck.
Big, cheesy action scenes. It definitely fits that mold of everything.
It's got the T-1000 in it.
Yeah.
That little cameo.
Robert Patrick as one of the henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, my favorite kill of an 80s action movie is the ice pick
through the eye,
or the icicle through the eye.
My understanding
and
was
he snaps it off.
That was an what Alfred Hitchcock fuck? Thing. Alfred Hitchcock once said that was the perfect way to murder somebody.
Yeah, no murder weapon.
Yeah. No
melts.
There's no really, evidence.
I watched it again and I was like, shit, what's his one liner? I thought he was going to say something like, yeah, you need to cool off or something. Like, I was waiting
gonna
for
put
a
you
line.
On ice.
Yeah.
All yeah. those ice puns got directed right into Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, I was waiting. I was like, shit, I can't remember what he says here. What's
do you know
line?
What killed the dinosaurs?
The ice
age. The ice age.
You only thought you had me. I would rank this, if I'm giving it like a ranking or whatever, I'd put it just a notch below the first one.
Sure.
For me, the big thing that separates it, the villain in this one is not as much fun as the first one. Alan Rickman is one of the great villains in action movie history. He's just, I mean, I love
Clay.
I love a villain.
Bill Clay.
It's like where you can tell he's having fun being evil. It's like he's having a good time just being a son of a bitch, you know.
True that.
Yeah. You know, he's like, you know, talk to me. Well, my detonators. You know, it's like he's German, he's evil, and Alan Rickman's having such a fun time playing him. And it's like that comes across in the movie. And it's like, I'm going to count to three. There will not be a four. It's like, this is just awesome.
This is fun.
Yeah.
I did like the... So I keep thinking about this film, and the first time I saw it, like all the way through, I was like, man, this is a great plot, because you have hostages that the bad guys don't actually have in their possession. They're just like...
Right. It's not like they're taking hostages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always hate those films where it's like, oh, man... We have a time clock. Like, this bomb is going to explode in 48 minutes.
Didn't he get a page at the very beginning of the movie where he called the phone on the plane?
Mm-hmm.
At no point could he have called that phone and said, hey, get me on with the pilot.
Didn't they say, like, the bad guys that they're monitoring all communications to the plane? I don't know how they would do that in reality.
But to the on-plane telephone, that's not a part of the radio communication. Well, they had locked down the communication through radio waves.
Yes. So they were talking about technology at the time. They're like, fax? You have a fax machine there? Oh my gosh.
Right. It was like the advent of the fax machine.
New phones here in the airplane.
You technology, John. Wake up and smell the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a great plot because, again, I hate those, like, okay, the
like, for as much as
the bomb is going to explode in 1 hour and you have to go through all these
on 58
hoops and then, you know, disarm it with like 0.5 seconds left. Like, oh, my God, we got it. But no, from the get go, you have a built in time of whatever 58 minutes that the guy is going to show up. But like these other planes have like 90 minutes and they're going to run out of fuel and
this movie did such a good job of playing the Chekhov's gun card, where at the very beginning she shows her the taser and says, like, next time somebody says something to me, I'm just going to knock him out with a taser.
That porker Willard Scott.
And then straight up later in the movie, she uses the taser to knock out the reporter.
But they
completely ignore the Chekhov's gun opportunity of, we have this technology with the phone. Doesn't come into play in the actual plot.
Where it's like they could actually like talk to the pilots and let them know what's up.
Like, oh, look, we have a line of communication outside of what is expected.
Mm-hmm. But they also had the balls to absolutely like kill an entire plane of people. And now, like, they normally it's the guy that's, you know, one or two people die, and he's like, no, this far and no further.
Mm-hmm.
But they killed 230. They said, there's 230 people on this plane.
Yeah.
They're one of survivors.
Two tie-ins I'm going to make tonight to Con Air. But the pilot of that plane was the FBI agent from Con Air.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Chief O'Brien.
Yep.
From Star Trek.
Yep.
Yeah. What's man.
From Deep Space Nine.
Cole Meany was pilot number one.
Great Irish actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
He was flying in from Heathrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to watch this from my perspective, because it's like, anybody who knows me will tell you that I am deathly afraid to fly. I hate flying. And so it's weird to watch.
It's unnatural.
Yeah. Watch a movie that depicts plane crashes. Mm. In this case, very graphic detail of a plane miscalculating the runway.
Todd,
I don't think you can do that anymore. I don't think you can just like set the runway like 200 feet below sea level.
No, that cannot happen. My understanding was that it is possible for a pilot on manual control to miscalculate the runway. that does happen. So
Todd, for his bachelor party, went to Mexico, and he was not a good flyer.
No.
And so he got a prescription to go there, and I hadn't flown in a good long while as well. And he might have helped me out as well. And it not so much on the way there, but on the way back, we had, I want to say a 40-minute, pardon me, I say we, I had a 40-minute giggle fit about Frida Kahlo, I think, and also Ted Cruz singing yeah. Onward Christian Soldier on the way back. I don't know what it was, but something got my giggle box turned over, and I could not stop that.
I believe the airport gift shop where in Cozumel, we went to Cozumel for a bachelor party. They were selling cardboard stand-up cutouts of Frida Kahlo. And Travis...
Frida Kahlo?
Yes.
Yep.
Frida Kahlo, yes. Was going to request multiple cutouts to bring on board the plane with him.
At least two Frida Kahlos.
Yeah.
But it, so somehow...
Buy one, get to Frida.
And somehow that morphed into no actual segue, but Ted Cruz and something.
You leaned remember. Over to me at one point and said that you had in your head stuck Ted Cruz saying Onward Christian Soldiers.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened there, but there was a lot of giggling.
And then your shoulders and your whole body were shaking from laughing
and so
hard
at that.
And
then the entire plane.
Yeah, you were giggling hard at that. But then there'd be a long pause, and then I'd look over, and you'd begin giggling again to yourself. That continued all the way back.
I'm hilarious.
That continued all the way back in the United States.
Well,
that was, there was a lot of giggling about Ted Cruz.
And Frida Kahlo.
Mm-hmm.
So you're afraid of flying?
Yes, I am. And that's a whole separate podcast. That's pretty much a lifelong thing. I've always been afraid of flying. So,
what movie was more anxiety-inducing? This one, Con Air, or what was the Steven Spielberg movie, the pilot movie with
Langoliers,
the firefighters?
Oh, with Richard Dreyfuss.
Dreyfuss. Always.
Always.
Always. Yes.
Ironically, definitely not that one. The most anxiety-inducing movie that I've seen was with Denzel Washington, the movie Flight.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Because I'm so afraid of flying, but it's never stopped me from flying. I will go anywhere. My wife and I have been all over the world. But, you know, I've suffered through it. I can't sleep on planes. I can't calm down on planes. I just suffered through it.
You just grip your knees and just, like, bear through it.
Oh, like, palm sweaty, knees weak, mom's spaghetti. Yes.
Yeah.
I've suffered through it, but I've done lots of research on plane crashes, so I know a lot about them.
Have you done a lot of research on Bernoulli's principle and the principles of flight?
Yeah, on gravity and all that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Isaac Newton. Yes.
So I worked community college exactly. library for several years, and I don't know how I overheard this conversation, but I've never seen Flight, but somebody was like, yeah, Denzel, my boy, is the only guy that can be on drugs and land the plane. And I'm
like,
I don't think that's the takeaway.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear your dad's take on that movie.
Yeah,
as a pilot.
Well, yeah, my dad talks a lot of shit about other pilots. Just recently, John Denver.
Yeah.
He's like, well, if he would have done this, and, you know.
Hindsight.
Monday morning quarterback. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Flight. And we could podcast about flight movies and my fear of flying. We could talk about that a whole lot.
Oh, we could do a whole season on phobias.
Yes. And we could address our phobias through movies, what we're all afraid of.
All right. Mine would be Ghoulies with, like, creatures coming out of the toilet and biting your butt.
Ooh.
They got snakes on a plane, but do they have, like, the one I would be really afraid of is toilet snakes.
Butt biters.
Toilet snakes.
So if there was another Samuel L. Jackson movie called Toilet Snakes, that would be a no for me.
Get these motherfucking snakes out of the motherfucking toilets. Commode.
Ass blasters.
I feel like he would say commode.
He seems like a commode guy.
So yeah, Flight got me because that was a realistic depiction of a plane crash.
What about Sully?
Which I have not seen.
Vita Sultanfuss?
I have not brought myself to see that yet. So when we could bond over that, that would be a good confrontation to my fear of flying, because that's also a realistic, obviously it happened.
It's a literal crash.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Back to Die Hard 2. Are these the loudest bullets ever on film? And also, why does he waste so many? He is definitely no John Wick. Mm-hmm. He shot that guy on the escalator coming towards him when he got his gun about 6 or 8 times, mm-hmm. when one or two would do.
That is actually typical police training, is you unload the mag. You hit center mass and you unload.
Interesting.
Don't just go for one or two. You go for the takedown.
No, thank you.
Because typically when adrenaline is rushing, you're going to miss like 60% of those shots.
Wow. Loudest bullets in a movie ever is Heat during the bank robbery scene.
Oh, yes. Those are loud bullets.
Extremely loud
bullets. Extremely loud bullets. Can we appreciate that the henchman was like willing to take the slow approach to come up on him? And even though John McClane was able to turn on the thing and like get the gun to come to him.
Yeah.
Like stupidest henchman move is just like, hey, 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 I got him. He's pinned.
Yeah.
I tell you, my old man was Irish.
See, I love that shit. Those just fucking hokey like one-liners. It's awesome. Boom.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great tropes in this movie. I think they use the tropes really well, and not like in a cheesy way, but in a way that, like, looking back, I don't know if it's like a time period thing, like looking back at a movie from 1990 that it just feels like it's a lot of tropes that seem obvious now.
So, yeah. And here's one that may be, you know, a little uncomfortable this day and age. In the first
The amount Die of smoking Hard in the film, in the airport?
And well, yeah, that was weird. But in the first Die Hard film, he has kind of the black sidekick that's helping outside, and that's Reginald Val Johnson as Sergeant Al Powell.
That's Carl Winslow to you.
Carl Winslow.
He makes an appearance in this movie.
In this film, he's got one of the air traffic controller guys, Art Evans, playing Leslie Barnes, the guy that's doing stuff. And then
the number two.
I wouldn't have thought anything about it until we get to Die Hard 3 and you have Samuel Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So unless it's a full-on good old Ebony and Ivory film, for the first two, he just has kind of sidekicks that are helping him out.
Yeah.
I just needed to point that out. I'm sure somebody better than me that can do a better deep dive into that trope.
Two is a coincidence. Three is a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say in three, though, that was also a script that was not originally intended for Die Hard. They adapted it to Die Hard with a Vengeance. Yeah. Okay. I think Samuel L. Jackson's character in that movie was originally intended to be an equal for McClane's character.
Yeah, I would say he's more of an equal than a sidekick. But
I always say the best Die Hard movies either take place at Christmas or star Samuel L. Jackson. But I also forgot, like, either have an elevator or him crawling through an air duct. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't remember past Die Hard 3. I know there's been a 4 and a 5, and 4 he was like Tim Oliphant was the bad guy.
It was either him or Josh Duhamel. I can't remember.
It was Oliphant, and then 5 was he was with his son,
mm-hmm. yeah,
in Russia.
It goes off the rails
a bit much. And
I don't know if there is an air duct crawling or a elevator in either one of those. Actually, I
but
feel
at the
like
same
there
time,
is. There's Mary Elizabeth there's Winstead and Justin Long, and there's some other weird elevator.
I mm-hmm. feel like this movie jumps the shark in the second movie. Like it, mm-hmm. it kind of goes off the rails in the second movie and kind of accelerates things to a point that's like, this has gone too far.
Yeah.
With the number of bullets, the number of like shots that come out of each gun without changing magazines.
Over
like,
the top.
So over the top, mm-hmm. not to be confused with the movie Over the Top, which is mm-hmm. great.
What kind of jumps its own shark?
Yeah, it is like mid movie. It jumps the mm-hmm. shark, but
it doesn't jump the shark, but like Stallone slams the shark into the water and suffocates it.
Yeah. And then he hugs his son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And turns his hat backwards. Yeah. So anyway,
but there is another part of Die Hard 2 that reminds me, I don't know why this particular thing reminds me of James Bond films, but a snowmobile chase. Mm-hmm. And I think it's maybe in A View to a Kill with Roger Moore, where there's a snowmobile chase. And I'm sure there's other James Bond films, but like when you have...
Snowmobile is just simultaneously like the coolest and least intimidating vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for some reason, a snowmobile chase seems very James Bond-esque. When you've got like machine guns and all that jazz, it just, yeah, that was one part of this film where I was like, this feels like James Bond.
Yeah, it did. I mean, just bigger, like you could tell that the mandate was bigger, broader, goofier action scenes.
Yeah, get him out into the open, have him do cooler stuff.
Mm-hmm. When he sets the ejector seat when the plane is exploding below him.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. I don't know, for some reason, to me, when he's coming towards the camera, he looks like he's wearing a Ghostbusters proton pack. I see that, and for some reason, I envision Bruce Willis wearing a Ghostbusters proton
pack. It's the shoulder straps.
It is. It just looks cool.
I don't think that's how grenades or ejector seats work.
None of that.
Because those grenades were straight up rolling around for like 15 seconds. Yeah. Just jingle jangling while he was getting his shoulder straps on, pulling that ejector strap. Like, it was perfectly timed.
And the thing is, like, these kind of movies, it's like there's world-class editors working on these. I know the first movie was Stuart Baird. He went on to be a great director in his own right.
And somehow it still was, like, the most drawn-out ejector seat.
Even as a kid, I'm like, Mississippi, you know, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. It's like four Mississippi. No, what the fuck?
It's like, I remember watching a James Bond movie, and he was, I don't remember why, but he ejected himself out of a submarine, and he was swimming underwater to the other part of a submarine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of the, not Roger Moore, but Pierce Brosnan movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember holding my breath while he was swimming. And I was like, well, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This is complete bullshit.
There's no way.
There's no way he's holding his breath this entire time.
Yeah. I've done that exact same thing, like holding my breath when I'm watching a Bond film where he's underwater. And I'm like, and I don't even realize I'm holding my breath.
And then halfway through, I'm just like, no, I can't do that. No.
Yeah.
No,
bullshit. The Ed Harris scene in The Abyss where he's trying to go from one side of the rig to the other. And it's like a minute. 2 minutes plus.
Oh, that's a great film, too.
Yes. And I would love to pause that.
Michael Biehn. God, I fucking love Michael Biehn.
That whole cast is great.
Yeah.
Is any relation to Sean Biehn?
No, because he lives.
Yeah, he survives most of his movies.
Most of them.
Most of them.
But yeah, mostly. Do ejector seats actually, like, rocket you up? Or do they just kind of like pop you up and then the plane is supposed to be moving
forward? No, they pop you up and you hit the canopy of the plane before it breaks away, and then you break your neck and you die and your name is Goose.
Yes.
No.
Spoilers for Top Gun.
That's so sad. So what would we give this on a scale of 1 to 10? Christmas movie and otherwise.
And I think that's the thing is...
Oh, the Yippee-ki-yay is also better than 3.
Yeah.
Oh, where God, where he throws the lighter onto the jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, was the best.
Where he loses, but he wins.
Okay, real quick.
He gets kicked
off. Reference number 2 to Con Air is the length of this runway is comparable to the length of the Sunset Strip in Vegas in Con Air, where that plane is crashing in Vegas just... forever.
It's like how they say
forever.
From your elbow to your wrist is the same as from your knee to your ankle.
Sure.
From the windows to the wall.
Yeah.
Till the sweat drips down and falls. Those are not the lyrics. But no, the length of when he is on the wing, jamming it to, like, I tell you, the length of a runway is less than a mile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is not long enough for a plane to be going for that long and like have a whole
multiple fight scenes
going on the wing.
And him with the fake blanks in the gun where he's like, the dude's not listening to him. Uh-huh. He's like,
if he pulls out a gun and shoots at people in the FAA,
I'm surrounded by police officers. I'm going to unload this thing of blanks. He would have gotten shot so hard.
Yeah.
It's blanks.
I don't know if that bothers me more than the length of the runway, but I think the length of the runway edges it out just because it's so egregiously. The timing of that is worse than the grenades.
Yeah.
But I would say overall, Christmas movie 10, regular movie 7.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go 7.5. I like it. Yeah.
It's fun.
I'm a big fan. I just think the plot is interesting of having hostages, but having them nowhere near you and having a built-in timetable.
It's a twist.
Yeah.
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 I would say Christmas movie, 7.5. Overall movie, 6.5.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I'd agree. I'd put it just a notch below the first Die Hard.
Would you watch this movie outside of Christmas time?
Yes. Because I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a Die Hard fan as well. I love these movies, and I've gone first three. Die Hard four was
four and five are both.
Yeah,
and supposedly they're working on a sixth.
No, thank you.
Yeah, so put last that in your pipe and smoke.
Three and Die Hard.
Yeah, it's a good day to die.
A good day to die hard.
It's a good day to kill this franchise.
Yeah. Jesus.
A good day for a paycheck.
Yeah. So coming up, we have a Spider-Man Far From Home mini-pod.
Yes.
And a Matrix 4 mini-pod.
And depending on how...
Yeah, why mini-pod? Let's just pot them.
It's going to be a full-on, like,
yeah,
dissertation on Spider-Man.
Yeah, we say mini-pod, but we pod the pod.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, Spider-Man is my, like, second favorite Marvel hero.
Okay, shut up.
So
what's your first
Captain America.
Okay.
Where's Moon Knight rank?
3.
Where's Captain Britain?
Oh really? Okay. So
4.
Spoiler alert for
where's Squirrel Girl?
5.
5.
When the Marvel series with Moon Knight comes out, I will be deferring to Sean's expertise.
Ooh. And I will be experting all over.
Yeah.
Also, we haven't done Hawkeye at all. I just realized
we have not touched on Hawkeye,
which I've seen the first 3 episodes. I haven't seen 4 yet.
Well, I guess there's only 6. Maybe we can pot on when it's all wrapped up.
I'd say when it's over, we should pot on it.
I'm totally down. I've enjoyed it so far.
That's excellent. Yeah,
yeah, it's cute. It's fun. It's nice to not have like the big world changing meta universe, whatever thing going on. It's just a tidy little series.
It's a romp. It's a fun little romp around New York City.
Good casting. I like Haley Steinfeld. Steinfeld. I don't know how you say her last name, but I like her casting. She does really well.
Sure.
So I've enjoyed it.
It's a weird note at the end of Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So there's that. And then the next movie we're going to do after this is Sleepless in Seattle, which will be set at New Year's Eve. It's a rom-com.
I hope your mango's ripe.
I know.
All right, that's You've Got Mail, but I'm going to continue to say that.
Same writer, Nora Ephron.
Really?
I hope your mango's
right. Any relation to Zach?
No, different spelling.
Huh.
Different spelling. But that movie, You've Got Mail, also featured a lot of people typing at computers.
Oh, God.
Dave really Chappelle did. In a, you know.
As the requisite tiny, best friend.
Oh. Super tiny role.
Yeah.
My favorite Dave Chappelle role would probably be Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Damn.
I didn't say Abe Lincoln. I said, hey Blinken.
Did you say, hey Blinken?
So anyway, Sean Jordan traps Bud.
Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Molto bene.
I hope your mango's ripe.
Yes.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
And we will see you guys next time.
Hasta luego.
Same shit happened to the same guy twice. You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.